next talk is about parsing PDF content streams. Why? Well, this is actually a talk that is the result of some company work. Mavla is a product and it facilitates paperless meetings. All the meeting documents are published via a web interface by the person that is responsible for the meeting, and then this is all electronically sent to the boxes of the participants, and they can download the PDF document. And so there's an internet site, and there's also an iPad application, and all of the participants are supposed to have an iPad. They use our own application for that. They can download their documents. They are automatically notified if there is an update to a document. They can make annotations, and then they can even share these annotations with the other participants. The documents themselves is typically the agenda of a meeting on the first page of the PDF, followed by a bunch of included appendices in further pages of the PDF. It's all in one single PDF for ease of use. That means if you download the agenda, you actually have all your documents, and you don't have to worry about fetching 10 or 12 extra files. It's all a single PDF. Like I said, documents can be updated because there is a first draft of the agenda written, and then somebody says, oh, sorry, I need an extra point to talk about. An appendix is maybe changed, added, removed. Lots of things can happen in between the moment where let's have a meeting and then the actual meeting. Well, it's a bit like a conference program, actually, which is a work in progress that changes at some point. It changes every other day until you finally get to the program, to the meeting, and then maybe it even changes in the middle of the meeting, but I'm not covering that. If there is one of these changes in the PDF document, then there redistributed to all the participants.
Are changes annotated?
At the moment, not yet, but there will be soon. Yeah. Okay, so participants can make annotations actually by writing on a document on their iPad application. These annotations, they have an author and they also have an intended audience. You can create something just for you, or you can create something that you want to share with all the other meeting participants. If you have a longer remark on a point or an explanation or something. Or you can create a mark that's only meant to the meeting president, etc. Quite a few options there. And these annotations, they apply to a specific bit of the source text. There's a few types. You can do a highlight or a sticky note or at your option. These are not PDF annotations, by the way. They're our own format of annotations because we need extra info in there that is not available in PDF annotations. Also, we want to send them out separate from the PDF annotations. The iPad app then communicates with the network server and stores all these annotations on the server. Even the private ones are stored on the server, because if you delete the local document, so you have to re-download it, then
stuff doesn't get lost.
It doesn't get lost. When you download the new document, you automatically also download all the annotations that are in it. And you can also update an actual annotation, or you can respond to somebody else's annotation. This annotation server has two sets of information it needs to keep track of. There's this group wide information, which is the text of it and the location in the PDF. There's also the private audience information, like whether it's been downloaded, if it's read or unread. Actually, you have to be careful with deciding when an annotation has been read, because you cannot say it's downloaded so it's read. That's not true. You have to wait until the page that this annotation is on has actually been viewed by the user. And then in the case of a sticky note, you even have to make sure that it has been opened. And then you have to trust that if somebody clicks on open, that they are actually reading it. Now, this also means that there's lots of server-client communication going on. Not just downloading the PDF, which is a huge but simple chunk of, but also all these tiny things for these annotations. And we're trying to be as efficient as possible. So generally, we only give the word indexes on a specific PDF page and the page number. That's, and then of course the contents, etc. But it's the location thing is the most interesting thing for this talk. The problem is that if a document changes, then all annotations that follow below the change may need to be updated. Not necessarily, but it's possible. It's the shifting footnote problem, but then for annotations. The process is much more complicated than I do in the slide, but it's easier to just focus on what I want to talk about. The problem, the main issue is that the server needs to know what words are on any PDF page, as well as the location of this word on the page. And then the extraction process on the server has to agree with the extraction process on the iPad. So, sidetrack and see what we have available. PDF display on the iPad. It's very easy to produce an image of a PDF page, but it doesn't contain any of the annotations. It's just a simple view of. It doesn't do any form processing either. It just, it's a bit like using XPDF. Then besides that, Apple provides an interface to get all the rest of the information. So that's why there are so many PDF viewer applications on the iPad, because this interface is very easy to use. And so each and every company that needs a PDF viewer looks at it and thinks, oh, here's how we would do it. And so that's exactly what we do as well. But just lexing a PDF content isn't good enough. If you want to know where the objects are, you actually have to interpret the PDF content stream. This is not provided by Apple, you have to do that yourself. And that's on the server side, the system is much the same. Displaying a PDF tends to be easy. You just fork the problem off to Cairo and say, I want a PDF here. Text extraction can be done on the command line using PDF to text. However, that only gives you text, not locations. There's no free tool I could find that produces locations as well as text.
What about Zoomtech? What about Zoomtech? Doesn't the Zoomtech PDF extensions
do? Possibly. Possibly.
Okay. That's okay, what comes to mind, because it's, but if you produce...
But it doesn't really matter that much, because anything you can use on the server is unusable on the iPad. By definition, almost.
Okay.
Because if you want something on the iPad, it has to be closed source. And basically every solution you can find that is affordable is open source.
NGPL.
NGPL and refuses to be closed. So. The much trickier point is that obviously you cannot guarantee that what Poplar thinks is a word agrees to what Apple thinks is a word. PDF interpretation is part guesswork, especially when it comes to word boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
So you never know what happens. So the solution obviously is to write your own software and then write it in such a way that the same releases of the software for the server and the iPad actually use the same code, so they will always agree. There could be differences in between versions, but of course the iPad software is based on the Apple Lexer. If you have a Lexer, then why not use it? The server software has a new Lexer based on Poplar. And they're using the same interpreter that I wrote in C and partly in Lua at the moment, but it's going to be C. The Lexer for Poplar is written from scratch because there isn't one. That was a big surprise, but there really isn't one.
Parsing of contents?
Right? Yeah, nothing.
Yeah, they have made noises about that, but yeah. But XPDF must do that. I mean, displays the contents green.
No, there's a function called display page. And that does all the work, but it's all internal.
And you need C, yeah.
I wanted to do a prototype while developing, exactly because this parsing PDF is a fuzzy business. I'm using LuaTeX ePDF, is a library that binds to Poplar in Lua. So you can write your source code originally in Lua instead of in C. And then I wrote a context stream lexer myself, and that's a new LuaTeX extension that will be in the next LuaTeX version. So, but APDF, it's written by Hartmut. It provides Lua access to the Poplar that is already in LuaTeX. Of course, LuaTeX contains Poplar to include external PDF documents, just like PDFTeX does. And then Hartmut created binding code to glue the things together so you can talk to Poplar. It's used, for example, by context to you can include an external PDF page and still keep the internal linking in that PDF page intact these days. That was previously impossible, but now it works. That's quite a bunch of functions. But they're all quite low level because they're basically linked to the Poplar interface.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a bit haphazard. There's, of course, Poplar started out as XPDF, and the XPDF started out with writing the utility functions for stuff they need, and then writing something more elaborate but never deleting the utility functions, so the library is a bit confusing sometimes. Anyway, it's all nicely documented in the LuaTeX reference manual. You really need that. It's about 10 pages of densely packed function call definition. Bit of an example. Here's how you get a crop box. So I call it run. This is meant to be run by TechLoa on the command line. So arg1 is the first argument on the command line, and it will run. Then the function run gets this file name, it opens the file, and it fetches the catalog from the PDF file. Then it fetches the number of pages. It sets a local page number, then print the number of pages in the PDF, then fetch the page from the catalog, then fetch the crop box from the page and do some printing. Update the page number, loop back. I don't have the output now, but you can sort of imagine what it does. So. Now relaxing is converting the input bytes into tokens, right? Like for a programming language where you have to decide whether something is a function or a variable or a number. So they have types and they have values. Values can be simple things, but values can sometimes be very complicated things. Popper provides you a nice way to get a single byte from a string. But one thing it does do, and that's great, it applies the content filters that are needed. That saves life quite a bit, because there's quite a few filters possible, and it tries to solve them all. So compression for PDF streams is automatically uncompressed before you get this character. It even decompresses in chunks. So if you have a very large string, then it doesn't blow out of memory. That's all right. Something else to say here? No. Okay. A quick bit about stream filters. Just a little bit of PDF syntax. It says this is object number 184. It has a length of 32 bytes. This is actually in Emacs notation, but so it's more than 23 now. Of course, Emacs notation is a bit funny, but it was the simplest way to show you this is what it looks like when you open a PDF in Emacs. So this control P is actually a single byte, and this is a single byte. But the thing is, it tells you that this from here to there is 23 bytes as is, and it's using the flake decode filter. Now, cool, if you decompress this, you get this. This is an interesting side effect of certain amounts of compression, is that the original string was a whole lot shorter. And it's still as incomprehensible. Want to guess what it is?
Some string?
This is the uncompressed format of it. Any idea what PDF object it is?
Image, string.
It's a font sitmap.
Or
it's a sitmap. The thing that maps the numbers in the font to the encoding of the font.
That's binary?
Yeah, that's binary. That's one bit per...
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, page content streams are not binary. They are using PDF operands and operators. We already saw an example of some PDF operators from Patrick's talk. So... this says the gray stroke, I think, and this is the gray fill. This is an auto reset that is done by the PDF code, I think. And this switches to black, and then it saves the state, creates a rectangle that it then fills, then it restores the state, and okay. And it's the other way around. This is black and this is white. Okay. Anyway, if you want to do something useful with this, then you have to convert this into tokens. But 0 is a number, and G is an operator with the name G. And you try to get rid of the spaces in between because you don't really need them. Some popular feeds. There's no way to get the full text of them. That's because it decompresses blocks. And if the content stream of a page is an array, then you have to glue them yourself. This is a little bit of a bug. But if you open a stream, the first thing you have to do is reset it. Otherwise it doesn't work. Some Lua code that is fetching some information from a bunch of streams. This is the trick for if the type is user data, that means in Lua speak that it's an actual stream, and otherwise it's a table that's an array of streams. So if it's a simple stream, you can put it in the current stream, and otherwise you have to create an array of streams. Then reset stream, so that's the current stream also in this block. Then when you have this current stream, you have to call reset, and then you fetch the first byte, and then while the byte is still larger than zero, you get minus one at the end of the stream. And blah blah blah, do something, fetch the next byte, loop back, and then at the end, if you don't, if there is still a stream, sometimes there's not for some reason. If you still have a stream, then you close the stream to nicely deallocate the memory. I think if you ask past the end of the stream, I think it auto deallocates itself, resets itself to zero. This getHar function, that was a helper I wrote in Lua because you need to take care of this array construct. So the first version I wrote in Lua for this lecture, using one of these loops that you saw earlier. Then later I converted it into straight C++ because that runs a whole lot faster. And it takes a stream, or it takes a Lua table of these streams, creates an operand stack, and then it executes operators that you want to have executed. You don't want to execute all of them, but usually there are many that you are not interested in at all. So whenever it finds an operator that you don't want to use, it clears the operand stack for you and processes the next one. Of course, I kept the interface the same. That allows me to switch easily between the Lua version and the C++ version. And this will go into Lua chat. Usage example. This is a bit tricky because if you're writing a parser for PDF, there's quite a few things you need to keep track of. If you want to know where you are on the page, you need to know the current transformation matrix. So you'll have to store this current matrix somewhere in a way that you can query it in the next operator. So most of this doesn't really do anything. It creates this. This is one of my helpers. I may have it on the next slide, maybe not, but it doesn't really matter much. The trick is it creates this info structure, which is a Lua table that has a bunch of extra info. It's a storage space for scratch information you need during the parsing. Then here is this thing with the multiple array construct again, and then actually in both cases, in this case it runs straight with all these partials, and in this case it runs with a single content. Like I said, it's using the same interface that I had earlier. And it gets an operator table. This is the operators that you want to work on, and this info object itself. I didn't want to put this. The operator implicitly into the thing, so it could be in two completely separate objects. I just did that for the example now. Easier that way. That's an empty slide. So, first argument is a stream or an array of streams. Second argument is an operator table. The keys are the names of the operators, and the values are the functions that are called. And this context variable is the third argument. Here's this helper thing. It creates the state, and then it creates a state stack. That can be this QQ thing. arm. Then it creates a very simple operator table. In this case, it only interprets CM. And then this handle CM is on the next page. Oh, not yet. Yeah, okay. This is handle CM. So this is the object that is currently parsing. This is this info thing that we passed along earlier. And then you can ask the scanner to pop a number. There, of course, if you're not certain that your PDF is valid, then you should actually do a check here somewhere.
Yeah.
But usually with PDFs, they tend to use the correct syntax internally. And if they don't, then there are far more serious problems than finding a null variable here. These are the concatenation matrix arguments. There's another helper that actually creates a transform. And then, now from this info, we're picking up the current state. And then the current state, current transition matrix is concatenated with this matrix from. Okay. Yeah. Fairly straightforward. If you implement the Q and Q, you just have to pop a state and push a state. There's a bunch, this pop number, which produces a number, and pop string, that produces a string. If for some reason there is not a string at the top of the stack, you get a nil.
And the stack is unchanged.
Yeah?
And the stack is unchanged.
No, that it's actually popped.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so you can get the next one. And then name objects, array objects, dictionary objects, Boolean objects. That's about it. There are some more objects possible in PDF, but they tend not to be in content streams. After each operator, whether or not you are interpreting this operator, after each operator, the stack is cleared. Well, yeah, it works, but there's still some stuff to work out before this goes really public. It's one thing to have a solution internally for us. It's another thing to have potentially hundreds of people working with it. So we need to think about what the good format is for pop array and pop dict. If you're popping a singular value, then it's easy enough. A PDF number becomes a Lua number, a PDF string becomes a Lua string. That's easy. But in the array and dictionary cases, it's not so clear. Inline images in the content stream are a nightmare. And I have to write some documentation. Let's go back to these values. I'm currently doing something like this. And it's not really pretty, but I should probably push some sort of user data object instead. Maybe even use the same interface that Hartmut's ePDF uses to repo Poplar, but that's still to be done. Inline images are a completely horrible invention by somebody by Adobe. That
how often are they actually used?
They tend to be either not used or used for each and every character on the page.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, some OCR software does this. Well, not even OCR, some scanner software. There's cliff recognition, and then instead of OCRing, it produces an inline image.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. The problem with these things is that it's not a single operator. You would think that in PDF stuff tends to be a single operator with a bunch of operands. Well, not in this case. let's do everything differently. There's actually three operators involved. Begin inline image,
then you have to
image data, and end inline image. This bit is a bit like a dictionary.
Yeah.
Except it really is a bit like a dictionary. It's actually an implied array because there are no angle brackets. So it's described in the spec as a pair of key value things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but that, okay, just imagine it's a dictionary and
yeah.
You can just process this reasonably well. The nasty thing is that this is the image data.
Yes.
And over here, it doesn't tell you how long the image data is going to be.
What?
Yeah, it doesn't say. The only way to find that out is to actually run the filters. And of course, usually you can think, okay, there will not be an AI inside this stream. But that's a false assumption, because there can be an AI inside of that stream if you use ASCII-85 encoding.
And then what?
Well, and then chaos, basically.
Hmm?
Then chaos, yeah. At the moment, the lecture is looking for AI new line. And then it hopes that that is unlikely enough to work in 99% of all cases.
Well, you have to
be
the height of the sample.
Can it's a puzzle working?
Yeah, but you, this is pixels.
If you have a filter A85,
yeah,
you can look for the end of stream
yeah.
marker.
Yeah, true.
So for what?
Filter.
Oh, that's yeah.
Radar.
But you have to analyze filters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes use them.
No. Just analyzing the filters isn't nearly as bad as actually executing the filters. So
yes.
Does Poplar help you anyway in this, or
no.
Is it just
no. All this other stuff is completely internal and cannot be accessed.
So you have to write the filter.
That was quite a good idea, just to interpret what it says here. And then base the prediction for EI on what is actually in the film. That should work. It already works in 99.9% of all cases. It's not very likely that. But this why there is no L here? Well, in all other streams, there is a length is completely.
Yes.
No comments.
No comment.
They spared some bytes. Of course.
Yeah.
I think that
the
F2
is on the table, so
making another.
Okay.
Yes.
Pass.
Well, PDF Parser will be in the next official LoRTech release. Whenever that will be. After some solving. Whenever that will be is usually, it's going to be after this conference, because I had to solve these other things, but it's going to be fairly immediately after this conference. We're talking
in
2 weeks, 3 weeks.
In time for the TechLab 2013.
Easily, yeah. Now I want to get this officially finished so I can move on to something else. So after the conference is one of the first things I'll do.
Fine.
Question.
Is it going to be a version 1.0?
This is next quarter. No. No, it's going to be 0.8 or 0.75 or something. There's no way I can. There's some stuff we want to do, but there's also 3 or 4 pages of bug reports. And there's no way to do all of these bugs.
This kind of stuff is also sort of independent of the main.
Yeah, it is. It's completely on the side.
Nice.
Yeah.
Since you can handle now PDF content streams, I'm just thinking on a possibility. I'm merging PDF files
mm-hmm.
and combining several versions. which include multiple copies of fonts, of images,
yeah.
things like that. And I'm just playing with a small shell script which does MD5 checks and something like that of every object, just
mm-hmm.
to identify which objects are duplicated, so I can
yeah.
just collapse them into one. So if I display two copies of the identical
yeah.
images and combine
yeah.
PDFs,
yeah.
that should be possible with that mechanics too.
Yeah.
Handling it in Lua instead
yeah,
of
that should be
cool.
Yeah, it should be
cool.
Yeah,
that should be because then you don't want to look at content streams if you just want to see if they are synced.
Yeah, just
you don't you don't have to render
collecting hashes and
yeah, you don't need this content stream stuff.
Yeah,
no.
You do
no?
Now.
No. I don't think.
Yeah.
Okay.